Hey, Bill.
Hi, Matt. Another edition of The Week in Blog. We're on a tight schedule today because Matt Lewis's home in Virginia has been hit hard by a major storm.
No, it was a disaster conditions in Alexandria, Virginia. It wasn't a tornado, but it might as well have been. It was major winds that uprooted trees and all sorts of bad stuff. And it actually hit just as we were about to tape this originally. So we're a little bit later than normal, and I'm a little bit more, even more disheveled than normal. So,
but busy people on tight schedules, but we'll make it work because we love blogging it so much.
And we are professionals. I mean, let's not forget that this show is the reason that the hotline threw up their hands and said, we can't compete anymore. We're not going to do the blogometer. So the show goes on.
After a lot of liberal agita and grousing at the state of affairs, great celebration this week when a federal judge struck down the Prop 8 ballot initiative in California, which had banned equal marriage rights for gays and lesbians. And a quick turn in the liberal blogosphere looking at the conservative reaction to this over at Wonk Room, Igor Volsky rounded up conservatives trying to pin the legal loss on, I believe, just rumors that the judge in the case, Von Walker, is gay himself. I mean, rumors have been reported by mainstream media outlets, not total.
Well, this is an interesting story, Bill, because there's another issue I've been thinking about, which is this issue over does that matter? And there are journalists that I know who are gay. I don't think they're really out per se, who have been writing about this. And this brings up the question, like, should they disclose that? And I don't know the answer to that, but it's an interesting question, interesting debate to have. And again, I don't know about the personal proclivities of the judge, but should that be an issue? Does it matter? It's interesting.
And I forget where I read it today, but someone said, would you say a black judge can't rule on civil rights? Would you say a female judge can't rule on abortion cases? The argument that in favor of not making this an issue is, at the end of the day, it's about the ruling. It's about the quality of the judging. And if the judicial, in theory, if the judicial opinion is not legally sound, it will get overturned on appeal. And the other twist to this, and this that Volsky brought up in his post, ironically, Von Walker was nominated to the bench by President Ronald Reagan, renominated and confirmed to President H.W. Bush. Two dozen House Democrats led by Pelosi opposed his nomination because of his alleged insensitivity to gays and the poor. Democrats objected to Walker's role in representing the U.S. Olympic Committee in its successful effort to prevent an athletic competition in San Francisco from being called the Gay Olympic Games and for putting a lien on the home of a gay games leader who was dying of AIDS. And separately, there was an issue that he was in a men's club that had not offered membership to blacks for a long time. So he was opposed by liberals, and his nomination was stalled for a couple of years. Does that in and of itself justify the ruling? No, but I think it makes it interesting that people often make snap judgments on people's opinions and beliefs based on scant data. And at the end of the day, you don't know until you know.
Right. Well, I think, I think that is a side issue. It's interesting because in the day and age that we live, it's predictable that this question would come up. I mean, as soon as a decision's made, people on the internet scour, the background of the judge to see if there's any bias. But I think a bigger trend, a more interesting trend to me at least, is that, and there's a lot of trends happening this week. A lot of these stories that we're going to talk about are interconnected in some way or another. But one of the trends is the the narrative, which really goes back to, you know, decades of conservative anger against the establishment, is judicial activism. And so, you know, the case in California, we had the people of California deciding that they wanted to ban gay marriage. We have an elite judge, by definition an elite, overturning the will of the people. Same thing happened in Arizona. Now, you know that I, especially initially, had major problems with the Arizona decision. But the fact is, it's overwhelmingly popular in Arizona. The vast majority of Arizonans support the law, and a judge, you know, one judge, overturned it. And so there is a narrative developing here which casts conservatives as populists against a small elite number of judges who are overturning the will of the people. Look for that story to play out and to be a narrative going forward to November.
Oh, I'm quite sure it will. You know, the liberal rebuttal to that is that you don't put questions of rights up to referendum, and that principle is enshrined in the U.S. Constitution. So
yeah, well, there's also an argument too that the whole referendum process is a holdover from the progressive era, and it's not appropriate for a representative republic, which elects members, state representatives, state senators, congressmen, to actually make tough decisions. It's a
having lived in California, if you want to have a liberal conservative unity movement to scrap California's ballot initiative system, you got it. Because that system is completely out of control, and has really, I mean, there's a place, I think, for ballot initiatives, but California is an example of complete excess that's practically paralyzed the government there. But part of the narrative you're talking about, saying that the judiciary should not be involved in these hotly contested issues, is a notion that there'll be a popular backlash, such if the courts get ahead of the people. And Kevin Drum took that on and said, there's no doubt that judicial decisions create backlashes, but the evidence is pretty thin. They create backlashes that are any worse than legislative or executive decisions. For better or for worse, everyone involved in American politics is now well aware that courts are an important part of the political process and they're fair game to be exploited as effectively as possible. That's just the way things are, and both sides play the game equally hard. In this case, however, there's a different concern. Using the judicial system might be perfectly kosher, but was it wise? The answer is only if you win. And this raises the question of how well this case will be handled as it goes up to the Supreme Court, which is practically a certainty. Yeah, there was criticism within the left back in the 80s when a gay rights case was pushed up to the Supreme Court, Bowers v. Hardwick, which gay rights advocates lost, and there was second guessing afterwards, saying, hey, maybe you shouldn't have rushed this case up to the Supreme Court when culturally the court wasn't ready for it, and now all you've done is enshrined an anti-gay precedent into the Supreme Court canon, and it took over 20 years to get that removed. Now this case is going to be, I think this was mentioned over at the blog TAP, the American Prospect blog, effectively this is going to be in the hands of Anthony Kennedy, who has been a very mercurial and intellectually inconsistent, in my opinion, swing judge, who wrote the pro-gay equality opinion very recently that struck down Bowers v. Hardwick, mm-hmm. although he stopped short of extending it to marriage rights. But who knows what he would do in this particular situation?
Well, by the way, I should probably mention that Josh Trevino on Twitter was one of the people really making the argument that this is a case of the judges overruling the will of the people. By the way, so I said there are a few trends happening this week, and one of them, I think, is this narrative that you have the people, you know, overwhelming majority of the population wanting one policy and one judge overturning it. But another interesting narrative to follow is really when I follow conservatives on Twitter, I really find them very divided over this issue and, frankly, many of the issues happening right now. I feel like maybe a third of the conservatives I'm seeing on Twitter fall into the kind of more traditional conservative viewpoint, opposing gay marriage. Maybe a third, don't even want to talk about it. It's not their bag. And then another third take a sort of libertarian argument, which is that that we shouldn't have a system where, the government is really involved in marriage anyway, that marriage has already become not a religious thing, but a civil thing. And so, they're not too worried about it. They don't really care.
And that was the heart of Walker's opinion. I mean, you could argue that it was a libertarian opinion.
Right. And so I guess the issue is you have the left essentially unanimously supporting gay marriage, and you have the right, frankly, divided. Now, I do think that there's a big disparity between opinion leaders and rank-and-file conservatives. So I think that more rank-and-file conservatives are probably more united against gay marriage. I think when you talk to people, the conservative opinion leaders, there is a lot more diversity. You have probably a higher representation of libertarian viewpoints that just, I don't want to be involved in it. It's not my deal. In any event, I mean, I think that there has been a trend for a long time, which says that conservatives have basically won the argument about defending the right to life, and that liberals are basically winning the argument about gay marriage. Another point that some people have brought up on Twitter, I'm trying to remember who it was. It was Patrick Ruffini, a conservative, sort of conservative Republican, good guy, Patrick Ruffini, sort of a tech guy, brought up the point that Barack Obama is Barack Obama out of touch? Because Obama, I think, favors civil unions but opposes gay marriage. I think that's his position. Is he now out of touch with the base on this issue?
I think that's a certainty. But he's not unique in that role. I'd say most, I haven't done a head count, but there's certainly a lot of Democrats who have not gone all the way and fully embraced equal marriage rights for gays and lesbians. And I'd imagine probably won't. We'll just sit back and let this play out in the courts while doing other things legislatively short of equal marriage rights that do expand equal protections. It's essentially where Obama's been. And they may be behind the curve at this point. I think it's a moving target where the country is.
Well, it is interesting, though, as I stated, and I mean, I think this really, I think it bears out when you especially look at young people and their views. I think that by and large, the pro-life movement has won, and I think ultrasounds have a lot to do with that. So I think that on one hand, conservative younger people are more pro-life than ever, at least in recent times. But then conversely, it seems like they're also more willing to, they're not opposed to homosexuality, gay marriage, as much as previous generations were. In fact, I think mostly support it. So it's an interesting thing how they're going different directions in a sense.
I mean, I would argue that, the trajectory of abortion politics is harder to map out. I would think with gay rights, there's a clear trajectory that we are on a path towards full equality, one way or the other. It's a question of how fast will we get there.
I don't know about it's not really analogous because I think that if you're talking about legal recognition, for example, legal recognition of say gay marriage versus actually overturning Roe versus Wade, you might have a point, but if you're talking about attitudes, which I think polling would bear out this, that if you're talking about the attitudes of young people, I think that they're very much more pro-life.
That's what I mean. I mean, I think some of the abortion polling can be disputed, as far as gay rights polling is concerned, like there's a clear generational progression that I cannot see being reversed anyway. I can't see the next generation somehow becoming more anti-gay all of a sudden after seeing gays in American life function as normally as anybody else, that would somehow get reversed. That doesn't compute in my mind. That's why I'm arguing that we're on that path and it can't be turned around, whereas abortion politics, I think, is murkier.
Yeah. I'm going to try to adjust my light here if people see me moving.
While you're doing that, let's segue to immigration, which is another issue. I think not only it splits the right, but splits the left. But it was noted there's been this increase in talk amongst some Republican politicians, even some that have been considered immigration moderates, like Lindsey Graham, that we should revisit the 14th Amendment, which is essentially the basis of equality in America, to alter it so if you're born in America, you're not necessarily a citizen.
Right.
And there's been a conservative talking point for a while that there are anchor babies, immigrants.
And what was the other drop?
What was Lindsey Graham's point that E.J. Dionne at the Washington Post, you know, was absolutely livid over? Lindsey Graham had said that immigrants come here, drop a child in order to anchor their family as American citizens. And E.J. Dionne said, how could anyone who calls himself pro-life view the process of birth as dropping a child? You've had utterly appalling. But this apparently was too far for Alan Keyes, very prominent, longtime conservative activist, presidential candidate, and I believe he's been carrying the Tea Party banner as of late. But there was a press conference of people of color Tea Partiers, and Alan Keyes said,
"I think it was called
the 14th
Unity.
Amendment is not some." I'm sorry.
I think it was. This might not be the same one, but there was one that was called Unity. UNITE.
I think that was a different event.
Is that a different one? Okay.
Maybe there's some relationship to the two. I think Unity was an actual rally, and this was at a National Press Club press conference. So Keyes said, the 14th Amendment is not something that one should play with lightly. I noticed finally that Lindsey Graham used the term referring to the 14th Amendment as something that has to do with birthright citizenship and that we should get rid of birthright citizenship. Now, if birthright citizenship is not a birthright, then it must be a grant of the government, and if it's a grant of the government, then it could be curtailed in all the way that fascists and totalitarians always want to. Digby noticed, if this is too far for Alan Keyes, you've known that you've really gone over the cliff. And Crooks and Liars and Nicole Bell started calling the folks that want to tamper with the 14th Amendment the Dred Scott Republicans. But in your mind, is Keyes representative of a real split in the Republican Party on this a split in the conservative movement on this subject, or is Keyes being a bit of a iconoclastic outlier?
Well, I think Keyes is always about Keyes and always about getting publicity, but in this instance, I think you are correct that there is a huge split here. And that's another trend that we're seeing happen this week, actually, and happen in politics this week, is that these issues are not clear-cut, obvious left-right issues. And I think there is a division here among conservatives. Again, you know, I was following Josh Trevino on Twitter. He's one of the co-founders of Red State. Josh was basically saying, are conservatives really arguing we should emulate the European system for citizenship, you know? It's a bit absurd. I mean, I personally don't think we should mess with the 14th Amendment, and I think, it's weird, too, that Lindsey Graham would be kind of championing this issue.
Well, isn't it a clear pander? I mean, obviously, Graham is pretty committed to immigration reform, and this is a way to get a cheap headline and keep the hardcore conservatives off your back.
But when has he ever cared about that?
Making provocative news.
But when has he ever cared about that? He's never really cared about wooing conservatives. I mean, didn't he just vote for Elena Kagan? I mean, he's not up for re-election for a while. The fact that
he doesn't want to do this dance.
Well, the fact that he's championing so-called comprehensive immigration reform already puts him at odds. I don't think he's going to win over a lot of conservatives who are in South Carolina are going to say, I hated that Lindsey Graham, but damn it, now he's trying. You know, I don't think anybody's going to, like, I don't think he's going to win anybody over.
I don't assume he's going to win anybody over who pays attention.
Yeah.
But there might be a more casual conservative voter that might catch the headline like this and miss the more, you know, backroom dealings that he's been involved with, whether it's immigration or Guantanamo Bay closing or carbon cap. He's someone who would say we absolutely have to price carbon, and then 2 months later say he's not sure that the science around global warming is real. It's that same sort of two-step, which seems designed to at least keep some piece of the conservative base at bay while still giving him maneuverability to be a deal maker.
Maybe. I mean, it seems to me like he was doing, in a sense, what Newt does sometimes, which is try to find creative and interesting ways to change the debate and to find issues that are not what people are currently fighting over, and just sort of change the debate and find issues that, you know, are 70% issues, as Newt would say, that most, you know, and maybe in his mind, you know, in some meeting he thought, well, look, I'm going to be, you know, for comprehensive immigration reform, but I'm going to go hardcore against this one thing. But I don't think it's not going to sell. And it's interesting. He's really introduced a wedge issue, which normally comes from your enemies, from the other side. But again, that's what this week seems to be a trend this week. Yet another issue where I've not really seen a lot of conservatives. I imagine that there are rank and file conservatives who would want to repeal this.
I mean, do you know where this came from? Did Graham start this? Or is this 14th Amendment issue bubbling up from elsewhere?
It must have. I mean, I'm confident that somewhere it's been discussed before. But clearly Graham injected it into the debate, into the political, you know, bloodstream this week.
It just strikes me as strange because you could argue conservatives had some good momentum out of the Arizona law,
right,
even though they lost a recent judicial ruling on it. But there is polling on their side, and that seemed to be firmer, immigration ground for them. Why go headlong into a constitutional?
It's bizarre, and I think it speaks to a couple larger points. One is that the conservative movement is still soul searching, despite the fact that, you know, there probably will be very good Republican wins this November. It doesn't change the fact that the conservative movement is still soul-searching after George W. Bush. There's still a fight between, really, it's these various factions that were held together by Ronald Reagan, probably around in order to defeat communism, which has been defeated for 25 years now or something, right? But those... you know, sort of diverse coalitions were held together, and we've seen them unravel. And so there's a lot of really deep, fundamental, philosophical questions that conservatives are still wrestling with. And then to compound that, there is no clear leader of conservatism right now. So I think this is just an unfortunate byproduct of that. But eventually things will sort themselves out. But
well, I don't want to just have this be picking on conservative disunity session. So let's mention briefly, you know, the Senate just passed $600 million for increased border security and drones on the border, more agents. And this is an issue that actually splits the left. You know, Obama is trying to set himself up, and the Democrats in general, I think, want to set themselves up as being, you know, we're doing enforcement first. So all the conservatives said, you know, secure the border first before you do broader reform. And since they're having difficulties getting, you know, enough support in Congress for broader reform, they're doing enforcement first, or trying to. And a lot of folks on the left that don't want to give them that political space, saying deportation, even though deportations are up, the White House wants to tout that. The left say that's bad. That's a very harsh way to go about dealing with the immigration issue, because you're breaking apart families. So don't be surprised if you see tension on the left over the next few months over the subject, too. We only got a few more minutes left before I have to run, but I do want to mention an issue that I talked about with Connor while you were gone.
By the way, Bill, I saw that he's moving to from Forum. Is that right?
I did not know that.
Well, don't quote me on it. I'm without electricity. I'm without.
I mean, power. You're not allowed to be his friend then, if that's the case, right?
Well, I look at it as a way of me actually taking over from Forum, so from the inside.
But there's the issue of the so-called Ground Zero Mosque, which those on the left would know it is actually not on Ground Zero and is not a mosque. After the Anti-Defamation League, whose mission is to oppose all forms of bigotry, sided with those who want to prevent this Muslim center from being built, major backlash on the left towards the ADL. Peter Beinart at the Daily Beast said, hateful Ground Zero hypocrisy. ADL calls itself the nation's premier civil rights human relations agency. Coming from an explicitly Jewish organization, that's an audacious claim, but it's an inspiring one, too, knowing the history of the ADL's opposition to bigotry. Saying indifference to the rights and dignity of Palestinians is a cancer eating away at the moral potential of the American Jewish establishment. Last Friday, in the case of the ADL, we learned just how far that cancer has spread. So very harsh words from Peter Beinart. James Fallows at The Atlantic, heralding Mayor Bloomberg's speech in defense of the center, saying, you know, I, all Americans are New Yorkers today in the wake of Mayor Bloomberg's brave and eloquent defense of American tolerance. This has definitely been driven from figures on the right like Newt Gingrich and Sarah Palin, but would you say that's not necessarily uniformly shared amongst all conservatives?
No, it's yet another example of conservatives being divided. You have sort of a libertarian argument versus sort of a more traditional argument. You know, I can tell you personally, I feel it's in very poor taste that they want to build there. I mean, if the government of Israel had bombed the World Trade Center, I would probably oppose building, building a Jewish center there, or a synagogue there. Now, that's not to say that it should be illegal, and that's really where the rub is. Like, should the federal government make it illegal? Should they use the power of the government to stop them? And that is where conservatives are greatly divided. And this is a typical split that we're seeing lately between kind of libertarian-leaning conservatives versus traditional and social conservatives. But at the very least, I think it's in very poor taste that they want to build there.
Well, I'm going to have to leave it there. Sorry to have to cut this a little short.
No worries, man.
But
my apologies
talking to you, Matt.
For all the craziness. Here, I'm knocking stuff over. I'm in a foreign, unusual location. You can see behind me here. Thanks for your patience. Appreciate it.
I hope everything gets back up to speed in your neck of the woods.
Yes, yes, yes. And we'll get electricity back by next week, I'm sure. And we'll see you next week on The Week in Block. See you, Bill.